The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Hey, a few weeks ago on Theology Thursday, we did kind of a back-to-back series. The first one, we asked a question which we're going to deal with today. Where are the men? That was the question. And went through a lot of really disturbing stats about men, grown men, but we can also look at that and just move down the line in terms of age. Here's some more, because we're going to talk about this from the perspective of virtue today with our friends at Iron Academy. Check this out. A major symptoms that we see. So where are the boys? What's going on with young men in society? Disenchantment with education, lack of motivation to work towards real life goals, opting out of the workforce. We'll look at a number there in a second. Self-imposed social isolation. Thank you, video games, et cetera, et cetera. And excessive video game. Oh, there it is. And news. Since 1980, get this, there's been a 71% increase in the number of boys who say they don't like school. For the first time in U.S. history, boys are getting less education than their fathers. Moreover, girls are outperforming boys at every level. Whether you talk about elementary school through high school into college, colleges are very lopsided at this point. Between 1999 and 2019, this is something we talked about a couple weeks ago, asking that question, where are the men? The percentage of 16 to 24-year-old males participating in the workforce fell 17%, which is continuing to go down. 60% of failures in baseline education proficiency are now boys. Boys' IQs are dropping. Boys' suicide rates are three times worse than girls. I didn't know that. And violent criminals are at least 90% male. So what can be done about this culture, about this society when it comes to the men? Well, before they become quote-unquote men, we refer to them as boys. And oftentimes we say boys will be boys, and then we'll deal with their manhood when they get to be 18 or 20 or 21. Not the case with our friends at Iron Academy. It never has been. It never will be. So back in the studio, Alan Hahn, our favorite CEO, not the CEO you think of, but Chief Educational Officer. And then Kristen Schrum is also back. She's been on before with Iron Academy, an English teacher there. Hey, guys, how are you?
Very well. Thanks for
having us. Am I allowed to say that?
Yes.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Yes.
Is anybody triggered? Is everybody okay? Mm-hmm. Kristen, you're okay?
No, my triggers are good.
Alan, you're okay?
Yes.
We're fine. Good. Okay, so this is a great topic. Obviously, this is the heart and soul of what you guys do at Iron Academy. And we talk about we look at them as boys. You guys look at them as young men and raise the bar from the get-go. And then, of course, today we're really going to focus on virtue training. We have a lot to go through because I want to make sure we touch on all these things, because there's the big question today is what can be done about all these nightmare scenarios. And I don't know. Do you think – I think a lot of us know anecdotally that men today are in bad shape, particularly younger men. But is it really as bad as it appears to be by these stats? What's been your viewpoint on that, Alan?
From what I see, absolutely. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I didn't look around and see too many boys that were 40 years old. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about, you know, people living in basements of your parents' house forever, though I'm sure there was some of that going on. But it was more that men and women embraced – it's what we call adulting now.
Yeah.
We didn't have to have a verb for adulting now. Yes. It's just you were an adult and you did adult things. But yes, I see a lot of boys, and I see our society training boys to be boys and not to grow out of it.
Yeah, and adolescence is kind of a perpetual thing, yes. And adolescence really was not around more than, what, about 100 years ago. So we kind of invented this gap year applied to, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of your life. For you, Kristen, and Kristen's an English teacher at Iron Academy, as a godly young woman, what are you seeing? What's your perspective of what's happening to the male population in this country in particular?
Well, I am extremely surprised just the degradation of a lot of the virtues that seem to be non-existent in men these days. I have a lot of friends, you know, who are still dating, and the stories they tell me about how the guys treat them or the way they're viewing their relationships, and it all sounds – the reoccurring theme I hear is guys just don't want to take responsibility or be tied down is what they say to something. They highly value this sense of freedom that really is almost an enslavement, ironically.
Yeah.
So It's really sad because, again, I have a lot of friends who, you know, they go on dates with people who they think are men, but really turn out to be boys.
Yeah, what age grades are we talking about here?
I'm talking about my age still is anywhere from probably 25 to 30, or at least the generation we are so lovingly known as millennials.
Yes.
But it seems to be progressing younger and younger. And I have even seen women want to shirk familial responsibilities in order to uphold individualism.
Right.
Which seems to reign supreme in America. And
absolutely.
It is definitely a Western ideology to hold the individual above everything. And I almost like to tell my students it's very neo-romantic in the sense that because in the Romantic era, they began to break away from logic, enlightenment, neoclassicism in order to value emotion over reason.
Right.
And stress the imagination. Imagination was your reality. It didn't really matter what the objective reality was. However you perceived it was what reality was. And then, yes, individual over society. Didn't really matter what the collective experience was. Whatever your individual
right.
experience
sure.
Was the truth. And that was it. I mean, it's evident in even the poems that we study in the Romantic era by Blake and Wordsworth and Whitman with his song to himself, mm-hmm. which, you know, is great in some areas, but essentially is an anthem to I am awesome.
Yeah,
right?
not a great idea for an entire culture. I had a guy on earlier in the year, Carl Truman, who wrote a book, mm-hmm. The Rise and Fall of the Modern Self, which really traces all this back. And how do we get to the point where a man can say, hey, listen, I'm really a woman trapped in a man's body. And the culture's reaction to that is, okay. Whatever you say goes. It's
right.
It's the autonomy of personal idolatry where you become
exactly.
God and you set all the rules. Does it matter, Alan, to you guys at Iron Academy for us as we work through this list of things that we can do? Does it matter that we tried to really look back and figure out how we got here? Or is it more important to focus on how do we move out of this?
So I think we could get caught in navel gazing. It's important for us to know those things. And I love what Carl Truman says about moving from the second world to the third world and how we define ourselves. All that's important. But if we try to do that while we're raising our boys into men or our girls into women, that's not important to them. Probably more than important to that is how do we combat this surge of cultural change that we're swimming against.
Yep.
How do we combat that? And it's so difficult in what we're seeing in in our educational systems, government and non-government across the nation and the world.
And we'll talk about that. We're talking to Alan Hahn and Kristen Schrum from Iron Academy. How do we move forward? What can be done? We'll start with education. We'll talk about dads. We'll talk about family. We've got a lot to talk about. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show here with our friends from Iron Academy, ironacademy.org. So if you have sons or grandsons, a sixth grade and up, you need to be investing, at least taking some time to find out about Iron Academy. It's really amazing what the Lord has been doing there. And it was funny today, Alan, and Alan's here with me as well as Kristen Schrum. Kristen is now the department head of the humanities department. And Kristen, within 12 months, is going to create the greatest humanities department in North Carolina. Is that correct, Alan?
That would be terrific, but I gave her a little more time than 12 months.
All right, so 24. Okay, we'll extend that out for you a little bit. And then Alan Hahn's the founder of Iron Academy, chief education officer, CEO, if you want to go that direction. I watched that video today, so that was a day in the life of an Iron Academy student with Phoenix who makes sure he doesn't know how good he is. Because the next thing you know, he's probably going to go try out at Disney or something because he's really phenomenal.
His parents love him too much for that.
Good. And so that's up on my Facebook pages. So you guys should go look at that, whether you look at my personal page or the radio show page under the Steve Noble Show. Go watch that. Okay, that's 4 minutes. And you go watch. This is a sixth grade young man telling you about his daily life at Iron Academy and then his interaction with other teachers and everything going on there. It's amazing how good he is at it. But the other thing about it is you watch it and you think, this isn't really possible. This is just a marketing piece. No, it's actually happening. But there's a way that you have to process and there's a way you have to teach, which is what we're going to go through. So whether you're talking about Iron Academy here in the Triangle area of North Carolina, education in general, at home, homeschooling, parenting, all these things that we're about to go through are going to be good fodder for all of us to consider and implement, okay? So we're going to talk about this process of how do we fight back against what the culture is doing to our young men, and we see it all the way up, like Kristen said earlier, into 25, 30, 35 years of age, men not being men, they staying boys. So education, obviously, as first and foremost, but you had a note here, Alan, that education has to be moral. So why is that such a big deal?
Well, we've seen in previous decades, we've seen our education go towards more vocational training and getting them ready for the future. But in recent years, I would say in the last 8 to 12 years, much of our education has gone back to the moral. We just wouldn't say it's a morality that we agree with. It's not consistent with a biblical worldview. Yeah. Critical race theory, for instance, is a moral training, but it's a wrong moral training. And it's one that takes us away from how God created each person of equal value. We're all equally sinful. We're all equally able to do imaginative things and create. So a lot of our education is more, but as Christians, if we're going to have educational partners, or if we're going to do it at home, one of the end goals must be that we need to inculcate a biblical worldview for them to see the world through biblical eyes.
Yeah, and when you're teaching English, Kristen, I mean, I added U.S. history to my teaching repertoire this year. Okay, so I'm teaching through U.S. history, and it's been really enjoyable, and it's remarkably rich from a gospel biblical worldview content, because history is just about people.
Right.
And the Bible has quite a bit to say about people and understanding why people do what they do.
Yes.
Do you find that in humanities, that these things can be really pregnant with moral meaning and opportunities to teach? It's sitting there right in front of us, but you have to teach that way.
Absolutely. And the same thing with characters in a book, right? In history, you have people with ambitions that are ultimately selfish because we're flawed. Same thing in literature, right? Conflict is created by the struggle between any opposing forces. And the predominant struggle we see throughout literature is a lot of times man versus self, man versus his own ambitions, man versus his own desire, in addition to whatever external conflict is arising in the book. And so what we try to do is, well, we look at those struggles and we study how the character responds to those struggles, whether they do it in a virtuous way or whether they succumb to a vice or a tragic flaw that is ailing them. I can think of one example now where we just finished studying Hamlet, and a unique angle that we took with Hamlet this year is, okay, well, where does justice play a role? Because when we think of justice, well, it's an eye for an eye, right?
Right.
But that justice, that need to avenge his father, one could argue was one of the reasons why Hamlet was beginning to succumb to madness and insanity, because it was a weight so great for him. He was so aware of his own sinful nature, as stated in the, you know, Act 3 soliloquy, to be or not to be. He was deciding whether or not to end his life there because he didn't know if he could go through with avenging his father's death. Again, because the world tells us, well, justice is an eye for an eye. Someone does something to you, you must do something to them. Well, Hamlet, being the sort of sensitive and intellectual soul that he is, wrestled with this because he knew, what am I? I am nothing but dust. I'm nothing compared to Hercules. And why would I be able to take justice for something else when I'm just as bad?
Yeah.
And we
Pretty powerful lesson there. Hello. Right.
And we see his sanity actually returning to him at the end, or at the beginning of Act 4, when he realizes, and he's talking to Horatio, you know, maybe something bigger than us is what is divinely making all of these machinations happen. Maybe I should leave it to the divine sovereignty of something above. And then he not only gets his justice at a cost, right? The cost of his life and the cost of everyone around him, pretty much. But he is able to at least make peace with his rival Fortinbras, Laertes and all that. Basically, he makes peace with himself, peace with his foes, before that justice comes around, after letting go, and ultimately he does return to a more sane state, one could argue.
Yeah.
But it's just a unique way of looking at Hamlet through justice, as opposed to, you know, some other literary criticism that is popular
in
academia.
Well, that's because the goal is virtue. If you're going to teach and train virtue, then you're looking at everything through that lens, and then you teach through that lens, which I imagine, Alan, is kind of the way virtue is taught all the way through the whole Iron Academy experience. If that's a desire, if that's a goal, if we want to train these young men to be virtuous young men, then you really inculcate it into everything.
Yes. It is easier in some places. For instance, in literature, it's really easy. In fact, every literary selection we focus on a particular virtue or vice. History, the story of who we've been.
Oh, man.
It's so easy in history, yeah. And it's wonderful. When we teach the Constitution, we're looking at it. What's the philosophy behind this? Right. What is the worldview behind this? It can be more difficult in some places, like your math. But it's easy in Bible, obviously. It's easy in the sciences. So as long as we have that throughout the curriculum and there's no separation of thinking biblically, especially from the teacher standpoint.
Yeah.
But when we're teaching these guys and they can see where we're coming from and teach them to evaluate and think biblically, that's absolutely an imperative for education.
And so going back, and we'll move on to dads next, going back, remember your children, if they're in public school, whatever school system they're in, they are being taught morals, they are being taught virtue. The question is, whose morals and whose virtue are they being taught? What about dads? Because oftentimes we think, well, let's send our sons to Iron Academy, you'll take care of it. But dads have to be involved, if at all possible.
Young men need a powerful man who's a godly influence in their life. We do have single mothers, and we love our single mothers, and we want to help them, and sometimes we're that help for them. Other times they find men in their church or their neighborhood or in their family to step in for dads who are not there. But dads are powerful influencers. In fact, one of the things we've seen in recent years is if dad is influential in a young man's life and he's not on board with biblical manhood, we don't win that battle.
Yeah.
So we don't even try that. Now, one of our things is we try to work in as an ally to the family and the church. But if we're not allies, we're not going to try to do that. But dads are hugely important, especially at this age. You know, developmentally, up until about the age of 11 or 12, it's mom. And that nurturing love that moms can give and are really good at.
That's right.
And then you have to switch over to
the dad.
Men.
Yeah, hold that thought. We're going to keep talking about that. What about dads? What about physical movement, since we're talking about young men? Education being engaging, there's a lot to talk about. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Today, spending some time in the studio here with our friends from Iron Academy. IronAcademy.org, if you have sons or grandsons, starting in the sixth grade all the way up through high school, and you're in the Triangle area, do yourself a favor. Bless them. Bless your family. Bless the future of this country, quite frankly. And check out Iron Academy. This is not a normal school. This is a school for raising up young men. Don't look at them as boys. Don't ship them off to have somebody else take care of it. This is a team effort. I don't normally quote Hillary Clinton, but I'll agree with her on this one. That really does take a village. So if you're in a good concert, a good body type of economic between yourself at home, your school, and even your church, but primarily moms and dads, it's on you. So don't farm that out. We have to be the number one influence, and most of us usually are, in our young sons' lives. But you need the kind of help that you can get, because that's between kindergarten and 12th grade. If you've listened to the show for any period of time, you've heard me say this before. Kindergarten to 12th grade is 16,000 hours butts in the seats. Okay, 16, that's a lot of time, 16,000 hours in school, whether it's private school, homeschool, public school. Same period of time, kindergarten through 12th grade, to get another 16,000 hours of mostly godless, sometimes anti-Christian input. That's media, television, Netflix, gaming, podcasts, whatever. So that's 32,000 hours versus, let's say, a Gold Star Christian family. They go to church on Sunday morning. They go to Sunday school and the service. They go back on Sunday night for another Bible study. They go back on Wednesday night for youth group or whatever. 4 hours a week, kindergarten to 12th grade, 2,400 hours. Wow. 2,400 hours versus 32,000. So you better believe that your sons are marinating all the time for 16,000 hours plus another 16,000 hours. The question is, what do we do about that reality in Iron Academy? That's what we're working through today. So this applies not just what's going on at Iron Academy, but any school setting at home, as parents, particularly dads, our call to biblically shepherd our children. But physical movement. Okay, so Iron Academy, and you're obviously a woman teaching at Iron Academy. We're all a bunch of spazoids, right? Boys, men, whatever. We're kind of spazzy. How do you deal with that? Because this is super important, because Alan, you and I have talked about this before, that the public education system, most education system, favors women, favors girls in the way that you learn, not so much for boys. So how do you deal with that, Kristen?
Well, it's actually what we do is we do these things called brain breaks, because in a psychological standpoint, there's only so much information the human mind can take in one period of time, and then it enters this phase called the bottlenecking phase. Think of a hourglass, and this just all this blockage now is preventing from the sand getting into the bottom. We have so their information overload.
Got it. Yep.
And it's actually an educational psychology term called bottlenecking. And so what we need to do is, okay, the young men need to get out, get some fresh air, get some blood, get pumping through their veins, and we do that through brain breaks. And those could be anything from, you know, you do a walk around the school, you jog a couple laps, you do exercises. Something I did even today is we did stations where we would go to this rig we have by the school. You would have one group doing box jumps, one guy's on the Atlas Stones, wow. Others doing walking lunges, and then they're there for 45 seconds, and then they switch, and they go to different stations. So it mixes it up, keeps them engaged, and, you know, they actually have fun doing it. They enjoy going out for the brain breaks and stretching out.
How many of those a day?
So it's for every hour and a half class, because we're on block schedule. We have one, we have a brain break generally right in the middle of that class. Yeah. So whatever block schedule, usually they have about three longer classes. And so they'll get about three to sometimes four brain breaks a day, because as a teacher, you just kind of have to see where they're at.
Yeah.
You can do one brain break and then you're like, you guys are still a little slow or sluggish here. Let's go. We just took a test, so why don't we go out for one more and then come back reassess.
How do you make education engaging for guys, Alan? Because, you know, we kind of wander off, and now everybody's ADD, ADHD, whatever. And I know some of that is real, but how do you make it engaging?
Well, so the movement's important. That's really great for guys, and that's something that all the homeschoolers can do. But do things that are fun for guys. So we're not a hands-on school. Everything's not – we're not a project-based school. But those are guy-friendly, so we do more projects. We do more hands-on. Dissections are always fun at a guy's school because they like to see those things and like to touch. They like to cut. They like blades.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, for STEM club, they'll build trebuchets. They act out Bible stories. But one of the things we have to do is we have to stay away from some of the things that young ladies are often better at and prefer, which is to express things, say through diaries or self-expression or first-person narratives, where guys might like more of the
sword fighting. Or we did a medieval skit.
Oh,
they got to
go.
Write their own sort of medieval romance script, taking where you have a knight and a damsel in distress, and they had to demonstrate one of the elements of chivalry, could make fun of one of the elements of chivalry, right. Because one of the things of chivalry back in the day in the Middle Ages is that it wasn't actually upheld by the knights who practiced them. So I bought a bunch of plastic swords, or we got a bunch of plastic swords, and we did chivalry skits, and I can tell you that was quite the hit.
I'm sure.
A guy a plastic sword, a young man a plastic sword, and he will definitely get engaged.
Engaged, that's exactly right. Now, what about, obviously, with Kristen being here and you being here, Alan, what about the mix of men teaching versus women teaching? Because that's an interesting dynamic as well.
So that's an issue across the nation. We have fewer and fewer male teachers. We need more of that. For an all-male school, I wouldn't say you need the majority of male teachers. But we do need men that they can look up to educationally and say, oh, this is learning is attractive. So they want that. Our mix right now, we always envisioned it would probably be like 60-40, 60% men, 40% women. We said, well, that'd probably be a good mix. One of the mistakes we made is the first year was all male teachers, all male students, and we were worried we were going to get into a Lord of the Flies situation.
Right.
So we said, all right, we need some females because we do need the feminine influence.
Yes, absolutely.
We happen to be at a ratio of about 4-1 right now, men to women. I love our staff. I wouldn't say it's because of the 4-1 ratio, but everywhere you need strong men teaching, and most schools can't get to half and half. That's really difficult. But I love our staff. We're about 4-1, but I love our female teachers. They're super at what they do, and the guys need to be around that also.
Yeah, exactly right. And I sense that and teach in the 7 classes I teach every week. Turning boys into readers, is that even possible, Kristen? Because now it's everything's digital, everything's short, everything's video. How do you get young men to actually want to read? Because this is a huge problem in our culture.
I think you just have to get them to see the value in it, and to also see that they can learn. Reading is not just a waste of time. they can learn from other people's mistakes vicariously by reading about characters who may even be similar to them in some ways, but fall short because of a vice or an ambition that clouded their vision, if you will. Reading today, also, you have to make it accessible. You have to know where the student is at, give them reading that's at their level, and slowly build them up. Right. I know I had a student who actually did not like to read at all, but I knew that he really liked horror and thriller. And I was like, well, you can definitely read Edgar Allan Poe, because not only is he extremely difficult, but he's right up your alley in genre. And so next thing I know, though, the student buys a whole tome of H.P. Lovecraft short stories. Wow. And then he's, you know, continuing to expand on his Edgar Allan Poe collection, as well as looking at authors like Nathaniel Hawthorne. And that's kind of a stretch. I mean, he's on the edge of Gothic writing, or American Gothic writing, if you will. But you do have to meet them where they're at as far as what they're interested in, and as far as giving them reading that they'll actually understand it first, and building it up.
But then again, you also, we talked about this before, you're doing reading assignments, you're working through the reading assignments, all with the purpose of inculcating them with a virtue ethic, right? Yes. A biblical virtue ethic. So these things all become tools to get to the end result.
Right. I think that's another way you really get them to read, is to connect what they're reading to their actual life. Because when a student feels connected to a character, just like in a movie, they're going to feel invested and feel like that text has value.
Yeah.
And so we really stress, or I really try to choose books with interesting characters, because at the end, I mean, again, I'll reference Hamlet. When Hamlet first enters the scene, no one likes him. They think he's throwing himself a pity party and he's all, oh, woe is me. But by the end of it, you actually feel for Hamlet because of the internal struggle he's going through. And he's really funny, right, when he's calling all these people fishmongers and just acting crazy in front of the court. They think he's hilarious, and they see just different sides to him, and they begin to empathize with him, and so suddenly they like him, and they get invested. And so it is really interesting.
And have you seen big changes in terms of reading comprehension and just getting them into it, Alan, in the years that Iron Academy's been around?
Yes. So over the last 50 years, we've seen reading comprehension scores going down across the nation.
Right.
And over the last 10 years especially, and that's especially so for guys, probably because of digital devices, but also because of the things we have to distract them to fill their moments. There's no such thing as boredom. Boredom may have ended in the 90s.
Quietness, none of that stuff.
Right. So one of the things we did is we removed a foreign language from middle school, and we replaced it with an additional ELA class in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So instead of just doing 6th grade ELA, 7th grade ELA, 8th grade ELA, we have two of those per year in the middle school. That's helped tremendously.
Yeah.
But I will say that when
hold
guys
that thought. Okay. We're up against the break. Hold that thought. We're going to finish that. We're going to talk about letting guys being guys, and something that's huge for all of us, being mentors. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Called facts.
Hold on. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. IronAcademy.org is the website you need to go check out. If you're here in the Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill area, Iron Academy is located in Raleigh, 6th through 12th grade. I've got it, the sign, because Alan was kind enough to give this to me years ago, the Iron Academy honor code. It's sitting right here in the studio. You never see it if you watch, because it's on that wall. It's not behind me. But it's a good reminder for me, because I see it every day. I will always conduct myself as a gentleman, live pure, speak true, right wrong, and follow the king. And that's... that kind of encapsulates the whole thing, doesn't it? Of all the different things and the sayings and the phrases and the great items you have at Iron Academy, for me, that kind of encapsulates the whole thing. When somebody, a young man graduates from Iron Academy, that's the guy you're trying to send out into the world. Is that right?
Yes. Everything there points back to the Bible.
Yeah, everything.
If it didn't, that would be a problem.
That would be a problem. Yeah. So one of the things, and you mentioned this earlier, we're here with Iron Academy CEO, which is Alan Hahn, and then Christian Schrum, who's the Humanities Department head. Christian, you mentioned earlier when you bought some plastic swords, and it's like we all kind of know what happens with boys and young men, but we kind of have to let them be guys, don't we? Isn't that an important part of this?
Absolutely. No, we have to engage what a young man's interest is, right? We can't expect them to be staying still in a classroom 8 hours a day without some sort of movement or activity, because that's not even just how young men were designed
right.
to be.
Yeah.
And so we need to have academics that are engaging them in every sense, you know, with the brain breaks, but also with just skits to make things more alive to them, dissections, like Alan was saying earlier. And even I know when we were read plays, we reenact some of the scenes and we go outside and we have fun with it. And, you know, we use some of the props in order so that they can see the visual as to where the characters are entering, how they're entering, why they're entering, who's there, why. In addition to them having fun and taking on roles, and, you know, they have a great time with it.
And I think in school settings, and we do this in Sunday school, we do it in our homes with a young man, Alan. I think oftentimes we kind of shut down that physicality of it. No roughhousing, knock it off, calm down.
Yep. And that's appropriate at times. Sometimes there's a separation between playful physical contact, which is healthy and good, and then there's aggressive domineering behavior, which is not good. And we think of that when we think of guys. But the worst thing we can do to our guys is not allow them to figure out what the appropriate bounds of physical contact and messing around with each other is, because then later in life they're not going to know what hurts. They're not going to know what harms people. So we need to let them do these things in the context of us caring for them and loving them and controlling things, not letting them get out of control. But if they don't do that, they will be people who hurt people later, because they don't know better. They have to learn these skills.
And then, of course, the whole culture is telling them that everything's toxic masculinity.
Right.
A man can't be a man anymore. A man has to be somewhat a version of a woman, and which is garbage. But yeah, there's restraint, obviously. But God created men differently than he created women. Mm-hmm. Knock anybody home paying attention to these realities. And you have to sew into that, not try to squash it. What about so our mutual friend at Friday Morning Bible Studies, Alan, Bill Mann, you know, the center of his life now is all about mentorship. Mm-hmm. So you've got an Iron Academy, like in the video that you can watch on my Facebook pages with young Phoenix, who's in sixth grade, talking about one thing, we don't have Iron Academy. And then he had this beautiful pause as if he was professionally trained. He goes, janitors. And then he talks about how they clean everything. But the mentor relationship, because it's not just we have great godly women like Kristen, godly men like Alan. The students are mentoring as well. So talk about that, because I think that's something as a society we're really missing out. We have no – it's age-based apartheid all over the place. Younger people don't have anything to do with older people.
So when we started the school, we started it for two reasons, the biblical manhood and the education that was conducive to the way young men learn. Over time, we started seeing how we were building leadership capacity. So we started developing that, and eventually we got to Genesis chapter 3, and we said, all right, and Cain says this in the negative, am I my brother's keeper? Our answer has to be yes. So we have to teach them how to do that. One of the things that we wanted to make sure happened is our first graduating class owned the culture. They knew what we were about. They'd been there for 7 years. They wanted to pass it down. How do you pass it down? Well, you have to have those relationships between the older guys and the younger guys, and it can't be forced. It has to be natural. So when we do it sometimes in formal situations where they have to head off some disciplinary issues. We do it when they clean the school together. They're hand in hand. They do it at refuel when they're out there playing basketball. It's the most wonderful thing to see a 12th grader pass into a 6th grader, or a 10th grader and an 8th grader playing ultimate together. But it's these interactions between them that allow the culture that the older guys have embodied and are now passing down for the younger guys, because they're coming in from other school situations, and their natural tendency is to say, hey, this is how we do school. That's how what Mr. Hahn says, and we'll do what Mr. Hahn says when we're around him, but we're going to do our own thing.
Right.
But when the older guys, John F. Kennedy said this, he said, and he was talking about economics, but he said, a rising tide raises all boats. There's nowhere to go but up when the older guys are embodying the community and what we mean by our culture, and the younger guys are absorbing that. And then it becomes normal for them to do the right things.
Peer pressure, positive peer pressure. Yeah, it's so important. Well, Alan and I, being the old fuddy-duddies in the room, Kristen, what have you seen with respect to this? You're a young, godly woman, and seeing this happen amongst these young men must be pretty interesting.
It is really fascinating, especially this culture of appreciation for each other that I really feel that we're building. There's a lot of sarcasm and humor today. I know I came from a family where whoever was the most insulting was the funniest. And when I got married, that didn't quite translate.
Have you seen videotapes of my upbringing or something? Because that's exactly what it was like in my house.
Right. And when I got married, I started doing that to my husband. He's like, why are you being so mean? And I'm like, I'm just kidding. And he's like, no, it's totally truth. Stop. But, I was always – it just was the way my family – we bantered with each other.
Yeah.
And I realized, though, there's a time and place, number one. Not everybody appreciates that. Not everybody finds that funny. And at the end of the day, it's not really biblical. It's not really godly.
No.
And so we are trying to stamp that out. And we're actually seeing amazing progress where we had a retreat with the eighth grade who are having issues tearing each other down. And it's been amazing to see how careful they are now with their words and how That's they awesome. Are trying to be uplifting.
Yeah.
In addition to, we do these things called IDEAs where we celebrate something that somebody's doing well. And at convocation, there were so many IDEAs today, we had to stop it or else we were going
to
go over.
Wow.
And that's awesome. It was so funny. It's become something that's normal to do for all the students to praise each other for good things that they're seeing. Yeah. And you just don't find that anywhere
else. No, the culture doesn't encourage goodness and beauty and virtue. It encourages all the wrong things. Again, they're all being taught moral issues. They're all being taught moral lessons. They're all being taught virtue. The question is, which moral, which virtue are they being taught? Mm-hmm. And encouragement generally is a currency we don't trade in much anyway. I mean, you get the much better laugh when you're ripping into people. And we do that. Social media has made that worse because you can get away with it. And then that coarsens you. And then when you're in face-to-face relationships with people, that the same thing starts to happen. So thanks for sharing that. Who comes to Iron Academy? I'm gonna finish up the last few minutes, Alan, really kind of painting a picture. Who's coming to Iron Academy, and how can people get involved?
Well, knowing your audience, I can answer this truthfully. So one of the things that we love that we're seeing out of our Iron family this year is the radicalness of it. And I don't mean politically. I mean we want to raise a godly son. We will reject what society is doing to raise a godly son. We don't want him to be normal. So that kind of radicalism in following Jesus, that's awesome. Yeah. That's what we want.
Yeah.
And we don't want angry people who are just angry with the school system they're with.
Sure.
We want people who want what we want, and that's biblical manhood. So we have a lot of common ground there. We have people from all kinds of different denominations, but it's very important that we want to build a godly man. We know that our sons were designed by the creator of the universe to be godly young men. And how do we do that? And, most of our parents, many of them are probably first-generation Christians like I was.
Yeah.
And we have to figure this out. Mm-hmm. So what does this look like?
Well, intentionality and understanding that the easier thing to do, believe me, because I've probably got a master's degree in it, besides the master's degree I do have, is to just turn inward. The culture is going to hell in a handbasket. Mm-hmm. The whole thing's flipping away. And so we know the end of the book, and into the book we win. And so I'm going to practice abandonment theology. I'm just going to take care of me, myself, and ours, and turn inward and take care of the church and don't worry about the culture. But the biblical mandate isn't anywhere near that. And so to love your neighbor well, we need to raise our sons to go out and be world changers. And I think we sit there and go, no, they can't do that anymore. Those days are over because this is a secular nation. You live in Babylon. Mm-hmm. But now more than ever in our lifetimes, we need young men to go out. That's the only answer there is the God's design for men and manhood. And, of course, biblical womanhood as well. Mm-hmm. But you have to have families. And I like that you're saying that. They have to be radical and say that we're not going to just settle for losing or settle for second place or settle for sitting in the back. No, we can change the course of this nation for the sake of our neighbors and glorify God. That's pretty radical.
Yes. We can't have generation after generation of milk drinkers. We've got to start handing down meat eaters. Think of the things that this nation – and it doesn't even have to be about the United States. I don't want to do that.
It's not but American-centric.
What could we do for God's church if it were generation of after generation of meat-eating Christians, people genuinely pursuing Christ?
Yeah.
Everything would change.
What do you say to the moms out there, Kristen?
Well, I believe that this should be a priority for young men, especially if they, have sons. It is extremely prudent to be aware of the influence that the world has on their young men. And it is also prudent for the mothers to know how they're going to combat that worldly influence.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just think it's it's you got to be wise. You have to be aware.
Yep, you got to be wise and you got to be aware. And even more so, you got to take action. Be radical, as Alan was saying. Alan Hahn, Kristen Schrum, Iron Academy, ironacademy.org. Always great to have you guys in. Thanks for your time today, as always.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I'll be back tomorrow, everybody. We're going to talk about parenting tomorrow with one of the pastors here in town. And that's an important topic as we kind of roll right off of what we're talking about today. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.